supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and coming up later in the show, we are claiming it's in celebration of the upcoming holiday, the most wonderful holiday of the year, Halloween. On Christmas, people have to give you presents. You know who has to give you presents. On Halloween, you get to extort candy from strangers, my favorite holiday. In honor of that holiday, we'll talk about burying your fig tree alive. But before that, let's bury some fabulous phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Antoinette, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, how are you?
I am just fine, Antoinette. What a beautiful name. I hope your friends don't call you Tony. I hope they have to use the full form.
Absolutely.
All right. Where are you, may I ask?
I am in Mount Airy.
Just outside of Philadelphia. Right, just outside of the Germantown section of Philadelphia. All right, what can we do for Antoinette in Mount Airy?
I just bought a house a couple of months ago, and my friend came over. She was very excited and told me I had an heirloom lilac, not a bush, but a tree in my backyard.
Right.
And then I found out from another neighbor that this lilac tree actually came from Monticello.
Oh, excellent.
Now, the problem with it is that it does not flower. There are two in Mount Airy, and neither of them flower.
Well, now, wait a minute. When did you move in? Were you there in time to see whether it flowered or not?
I moved in at the end of June, but I have it on good authority that it hasn't bloomed.
All right. How much sun does it get?
It gets the morning sun. It must be standing. So if I'm almost 6 feet tall, it's about 15 feet tall. So it probably gets sun all morning till the sun moves at the end of the day, and then a little bit in the afternoon.
Well, typically flowering plants need 6 to 8 hours of sun a day. I have a lilac at my house that must have been in the ground for 10 or 12 years before I got one little flower off of it. Now, I realized the flower was at the very top. And then I realized that the top of the plant was growing finally into more sun. Now, every year since then, I've gotten more and more flowers. And there must be some serendipitous thing that happens, because now I also get flowers down low where the plant doesn't get enough sun. So I think it's photosynthesis of the whole, so to speak. But lack of sun is the biggest reason for lilacs not flowering, that and improper pruning. So the first thing is there any way you can trim back plants near the lilac to give it more sun, or is the shade cast by a big building?
No, there is nothing. It's sitting on a fence line, but other than that, there is nothing around it. And I'm actually standing out here looking at it, and it looks like it's got some little buds on it down towards the bottom. When should it bloom?
It is a spring bloomer, so lilacs, even though they look tremendously unattractive over the winter, do set their blooms in the fall, as with azaleas, rhododendrons, forsythia, flowering cherries, things like that. Most of next year's flowers are already formed and are going to be closed up tight and spend the winter. So if the plant is getting enough sun, the most important thing is don't let anybody prune it. Don't let anybody cut it back.
Okay, just keep it looking scraggly.
Well, you know, they're not four-season plants, unfortunately. Neither are hydrangeas. I mean, if you want the big show once a year, you have to eat a pretty ugly plant over the winter. And if you can't do that and you keep cutting it back to get rid of that look, you'll make sure you never get any flowers. What you can do is wait until spring. Don't do anything to harm the plant. Don't cut anything back. And if it is that old, if it does get good sun, it should flower. And after it's done flowering, after those flowers start to turn brown, then you can go in and you can reduce the plant in size if you want by a third. but there's really nothing you can do to make it look better over the winter.
Or the summer. So there's nothing I can add to the soil. I thought that might be a problem, something that's lacking in the soil.
Is it growing in or near a treated lawn?
It is not growing near or in a treated lawn.
Okay, but is there a lawn nearby that is fed chemically or where herbicides are used?
Nothing like that.
Okay, good. Then the one thing I would suggest is you can go to a garden center and you can get a little bag of a substance called rock phosphate. A little bit goes a long way. If the lilac is huge, you would only still spread a cup of rock phosphorus at the base of the plant. And then immediately cover the rock phosphorus with either really good topsoil or even better compost to help it become biologically active faster. If for any reason there is a lack of phosphorus in your soil, it may not help next year, but would definitely help the following year. And then 3 to 5 years afterwards. This is not something you do every year. You just do it once every 5 years.
Okay.
All right? But basically, if it's in the sun and nobody's pruning it in the fall or the winter, you should get flowers this coming spring. Just be patient with it.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
All right, good luck to you.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Don, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing fine, Don. How you doing?
I'm hanging in there. Just got a little problem with ivy out back.
Okay, and where is Don's ivy problem?
I'm in Mays Landing, New Jersey.
Oh, excellent, excellent. There's a place I haven't heard from in a while, but, you know, Mays Landing, classic area of the Garden State.
Yes, sir.
What can we do for you?
I live in a development, you know, all the houses around me. My last 20 foot of my backyard, it's wild. You know, just native plants and whatnot, and it really does block out my neighbors in the summer and all. But the woman behind me planted ivy, and I didn't really notice it till a couple of my trees fell.
Mm-hmm.
And then I noticed most of the native vegetation's been forced out, and had my nephews cut the ivy from around the big trees, and that solved that problem of the trees being messed up, but it's just taken over the whole back.
Now, have you spoken to her, or have you looked into her yard? Is her house still there, or is it just a...
Oh, yeah, I don't get along with this woman, so...
But, I mean, it has to be troubling her as much as you.
Well, she don't have, like, her yard's cleared, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Where mine, I have trees, it's like you're in the woods almost.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess, well, she just had it for some ground cover, and that's fine what she needs, but it's invaded my yard.
Yeah, but it's the clinging ivy, right? It's the ivy with the roots that kind of exude a cement, so they really stick on things.
Oh, yes.
I've been told that that's Irish ivy, you know, not...
Yeah,
exactly. That wherever there's trouble, blame the Irish. You know?
There you go.
Why should there be any exceptions?
Right.
Well,
I mean, is there anything I could do? I don't want to use any chemicals or anything.
Well,
you know?
Chemicals don't work. If you tried them, you found out ivy's waxy coating pretty much prevents chemicals from sticking on them long enough to have any herbicidal effect. And ivy gets its nutrition in a strange way. So even these horrifying systemic herbicides, I don't think would have any effect on ivy. Ivy is like, it'll be ivy, lead plates, and cockroaches when we're all gone.
There you go. I can believe that. This stuff is tough, man.
Yeah, because if, for instance, if it were a plant like running bamboo, we could dig a trench and install what's called rhizome barriers, and that would stop the advance. But I know for a fact that ivy will climb over anything.
It's covered some big trees. I mean, you know, 20, 30 foot up.
Oh, yeah. No, ivy will climb up into the tree, and then it will do two things. It'll cover the leaves so they can't photosynthesize, but it also keeps the bark moist, and then the tree just rots from the outside and dies. So the only thing I can think of is to go back to the property line or a Maginot line, if you will, where you're on your property, but the ivy is just getting there.
Yes.
And put up a sturdy fence.
Right.
And then you just have to watch the top And when it gets to the top, you have a pulling party. But that would slow it down. And you know what? I'm going to send you to a resource as well. There is
How about what's in my yard now? How do I get that out? I mean,
it's
20-foot of ivy in my yard.
Yeah,
it's
wetting the soil. It's pulling. It's hiring a bunch of guys. It's trashing it.
But you can pull it out, I guess.
Yeah, you can pull it off. It's tough on structures because it leaves marks.
Right.
Also, go to the website of the Ivy Society. They will have some helpful tips there. Maybe even a fence design or some ways to pull it up that are less labor intensive. But yeah, you actually have to build a wall to stop it and then make sure it doesn't get over the wall. I'm thinking there may be some way to build a baffle at the top of the fence that sends it back down into her yard.
There you go.
All right.
All righty. Hey, thanks a lot, man.
All right. Good luck, Don.
Hey, great show, too. Love it.
Thank you.
All righty. All right. Bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and announce that I am about to or just finished getting you ready to achieve compost success at the Lower Makefield Township building at 10 a.m. today, Saturday, October 28th. But don't go looking for all the details at the events section of our website or a time machine just yet, because we'll be right back to bury your fig trees alive and take more of your lively phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by the Espoma Company, offering a complete selection of natural organic plant foods and potting soils. More information about Espoma and the Espoma Natural Gardening Community can be found at espoma.com. And by Burpee, celebrating their 141st year of providing treasured heirloom varieties, hardworking hybrids, seed starting, garden supplies, and more. Burpee offers no treated seed or genetically modified organisms. Information at burpee.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, we're claiming it's to celebrate Halloween, but really it's because we have never posted the details at the Garden Answers A to Z section of our website. How to protect a fig tree over winter. A very important topic, and unusually for us at the right time of year for you to actually use the information. Well, even a broken watch is right twice a day. Now let's get to your watchful phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Jeff, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I am just ducky today, Jeff. Thank you for asking. How are you, sir?
Well, I'm doing well. I was driving through Fort Dix and going there to get a photo at the Department of the Army Photoshop. And I parked beside a number of walnut trees.
So in New Jersey, this would be black walnuts.
Is that what they are? Okay.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure. So they were all falling, and I was just thinking it would be great to collect them and, you know, process them, but I have no clue what to do with walnuts, and they're, it's a pretty nasty operation, I imagine.
It is impossibly nasty, and you got to remember that these are not the walnuts you're buying at Whole Foods. These are black walnuts, which you never see for sale in the supermarket. They are, one would say, an acquired taste. They're so sour, they make your mouth pucker up. Now, I've been called out on this. I've been, you know, it's like venison. Oh, you just don't know how to make it properly. Well, after having 50 servings of venison made improperly in every way imaginable, I decided I just don't like venison. Thank you. And the same with black walnuts. I will tell you that instead of instructional advice, what I got most out of my black walnut experience was a couple of humor columns. The work is endless and the rewards are exceptionally poor. If I remember correctly, you have to gather, and you know the things that fall from the trees, the softballs, they're mostly husk. There is a nut inside there. But the husk is very big, and if you just start playing around with these things without knowing what you're doing, your hands will be stained black for months.
Right.
As soon as you break open that husk, this impossible dye gets all over your hands. Matter of fact, I think Native Americans used black walnuts much more for the dye because it's very, quote, fast. Mm. It's hard to get rid of than they did for the nuts.
Interesting.
Yeah, if you had a full-scale farm, I'm sure the walnuts themselves would be great to feed to pigs and stuff like that.
Okay.
But you got to, for instance, if you want to try this, you're supposed to either actually pick the husks out of the tree or pick them up like within an hour or two after they fall. You can't pick up week-old ones. Okay. Yeah, they're never going to taste good. Then you've got to, and I forget the sequence, you either put them in giant 5-gallon buckets with water right away, or you wear big heavy gloves and clothing that you don't like, and you cut the husk off and put the nut in the water. It's one way or the other. You can go look online under W at our website, youbetyourgarden.org, Garden Answers A to Z under the letter W.
Right.
I'm sure I've written this up. And then you have to crack them. And that was the hilarious part because, you know, I grew up in a house where my parents cracked nuts. So we had a drawer full of, like, nutcrackers. And I say we had because I broke every single one of them trying on. And then I'm out there with a hammer. I actually went to a Sears hardware store. And when the guy wasn't looking, put a couple of walnuts into the different vices they had up on a shelf. And I broke one of the vices and, like, got out of that store as fast as I could. And I went down to this to this specialty supplier in South Philly and said, I need a walnut cracker. And the woman goes, oh, yeah, they're right over here. And then she sees what I got in my hand, and she goes, ah, that's a black walnut. She said, it's like $50. It's like what they use to, you know, chop wood, you know, without an axe. So it's really hard. The nut is almost indestructible. And then once you get past that indestructible shell, the meat inside, to me, just tasted so sour.
When they're fresh, are the nuts soft like a fresh pecan?
Yeah, I think they were softer than something you'd buy, like a regular, quote, English walnut, the tasty walnuts in the supermarket. Yeah, they were soft, but it was so foul tasting.
Well, that's good to know. I won't collect any of these. I'll just keep buying them in the grocery store.
Yeah, again, the totally different animal. What you get in the grocery store are called English walnuts, and they're mostly grown in California. We can't grow that variety here, but the black walnut is a relative, but it's really not worth the work. There may be people who like it, but I don't think you or I are one of them.
Right. It sounds like you need commercial equipment to do that.
Yeah. Now, if you find a hickory tree that's dropping a lot of nuts, there's no stain and the nut meat can be a little hard to get out of the shell, but it's absolutely delicious.
Okay.
All right, man.
Well, I thank you for the info. That was very insightful.
All right. Well, good luck to you, sir.
All right. Thanks so much.
1-888-346-9499. Aaron, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi. How are you? you?
I am just ducky today. Erin, how are you doing?
I'm doing awesome. Thank you for asking.
Very good. Where is Erin Awesome?
I am in Plymouth Meeting.
Oh, okay, just outside of Philadelphia.
Yep, just outside of Philadelphia. I just moved into an apartment complex.
Good.
It's a nice building, mm-hmm. and I'm missing having a yard a little bit.
Right.
I don't get a ton of light in my apartment. It's not, like, dead pitch black, but it's not the brightest, and I want to get something that I'll be able to keep in my house that's relatively low maintenance that I won't kill, and I don't really know where to start.
Well, if you go online, maybe even at our website, if you go to youbetyourgarden.org, go to Garden Answers A to Z, under H, I'm almost certain we've done bulletproof house plants. But my dining room area looks like a botanic garden, even though it gets very little sun. I got some artificial light on it, but not enough that would keep a, quote, real plant alive. So the first thing is mother-in-law's tongue, also known as snake plant. This is a succulent that has really tall spikes of variegated green and kind of blackish, very attractive plant. The spikes can grow very tall, limited only by the size of the container.
Is that something you'd put on the ground? Like it's that tall that you wouldn't put it on a shelf?
Well, you would start with it on a shelf, and then when it outgrew, you'd put it on the ground.
Okay.
But generally, you know, if you're starting out, you want to see all the plant to begin with. And then as they get big, that's a great way to take care of things, is just move it to the ground so that you got the top part in your eyesight. But they are great plants. They are as bulletproof as they come. When I was in Cuba back in 2014, I saw them growing in the wild out in the open. And that was amazing. I mean, to see this, like, gigantic outdoor plant that, you know, I thought my snake plant was big, but this thing was, like, 10 feet tall. But they're very adaptable. They grow in all sorts of light conditions. Most important thing is don't overwater it.
Okay. What does that mean, overwater? Like, not even once a day?
Yes, exactly not even once a day. Maybe once a month.
Oh.
When you do this, make sure you also go to the website and look under W for wise watering. The biggest mistake new plant owners mistake is killing their plants with kindness. The plants we're discussing, bulletproof plants, it's much better. I had a snake plant that got pushed to the back by other plants. It didn't get watered for a year. It did just fine. And one of the nice things about succulents in general is they are the fleshy plants that store a lot of water. So once you water them, they take up a month's supply, 2 months' supply, and really the biggest danger is giving them too much and rotting the roots out.
Okay, interesting.
Another plant in that same genre is the jade plant, a beautiful succulent, can exist very well in low light conditions. The only danger is overwatering it because it is a succulent and it likes to be heavily watered once and then left alone for literally a couple of months. So, but they're beautiful, glossy, green plants. You really can't go wrong.
I was hoping that you would have a recommendation for something that's more, like, viney looking or has, like, hanging branches, that maybe that's where you're going next.
Right. You can actually use ivy as a house plant. Now, it won't be the Irish ivy that you see growing up the walls of houses and becoming a problem. You want houseplant ivy that will not develop those sticker suckers that are going to hold on to surfaces. But you get a nice houseplant ivy, and you can drape that all over the corners of the room. Most of the plants I'm mentioning, by the way, ivy and the snake plant, these are also good air cleaning plants. They recycle your carbon dioxide and put out more oxygen than many other plants.
I love that.
Spider plants are great. If you have a window with any kind of exposure and you hang a spider plant in there from a hanging basket, even in low light conditions, it's going to have, quote, babies, where you're going to have these big offshoots with beautiful little white flowers on it.
Awesome.
And then the other one, and I apologize for not knowing the botanic name of this. I should. But it was with me all through college when I lived in a big house in West Philly with my friends, and then I took some home with me, and that's wandering Jew. I wish I knew the botanic name, and I promise I will look it up. And any store that sells houseplants will know what you're talking about. This is a really unusual one. This is a velvety-looking leaves. Velvety really describes them perfectly. They almost have that feel of velvet, and they have that red-purple color. And they are hanging plants. They don't attach to anything. And amazingly colorful. All these other things predominantly are green. The wandering Jew plant is going to be just amazingly colorful, bringing in all these reds and purples.
Awesome.
All right.
Wow, thank you. I appreciate it. Yes, thank you so much.
All right. My pleasure. Good luck. And congratulations on your new place.
Thank you very much. Have a good one.
You too. 1-888-346-9499. Joe, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Well, thank you very much, Mike. How are you today?
I am just ducky, Joe. How are you doing?
I'm not bad at all. My question for you today is my wife and I just bought a house in North Carolina, and we got centipede grass down there, and we're going into the fall right now, and I'm wondering, should I be able to fertilize it now, or do I have to wait till the spring?
Okay, so where are we currently?
I live in East Hampton, New Jersey.
Oh, okay. And you're moving to North Carolina. Are you retiring? Did you hit the lottery?
Yeah.
What's going on here?
No, that's it. No, eventually me and my wife are setting this up for retirement, and we just bought a home down there. And this is the first time I'm actually having to take care of a lawn, because where I live in East Hampton, I have the homeowners association take care of it for me. So I'm trying to find a little information about that centipede grass.
Okay. Most of the lawn care information you hear on this show is directed towards people with what are called cool season lawns, like you would have in New Jersey, bluegrass, fescue. These are lawns that really like cool weather, that survive our winters and get a little stressed by summer. And the time to feed those lawns, if you're going to feed them supplementally, is in the spring and in the fall, never in the summer, which could double stress it. Where you're moving, you're going to find people are using warm season grasses like St. Augustine, Bermuda grass, and the centipede grass you mentioned. Centipede grass is probably the most ecologically sound grass that you can possibly use. Now, don't, you know, people here in the Mid-Atlantic and north of us shouldn't get excited, because it wouldn't survive our winters. But down south, where the winters are mild, centipede is the slowest growing, least food hungry lawn grass in existence.
Mm-hmm.
So it is the poster child for easy care lawns. The good news is you can have a wide learning curve, because really you're not going to be doing that much to it. It's going to be growing very slowly. And like I said, it doesn't really need a lot of food.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. But I think your instincts are correct. You don't want to feed it at this time of year. It will be going dormant for the winter.
Right.
And then centipede is not an overused grass, so I don't know if it turns color over the winter like zoysia grass does. But if it does, if it turns a little brown or tan, don't worry about it. But it will green up in the spring. It may even stay green over the winter. But in... when it starts to get warm, really warm, and stay really warm, if you want to give your lawn a feeding, that would be the time to do it. But a very gentle feeding.
Okay.
1/2 to 1/4 of what would be recommended for an aggressive growing lawn, like Bermuda grass or even St. Augustine.
Right. Okay. Okay.
If your soil is sandy, as a lot of soils in the Carolinas are, the best way to feed it would just be have some bulk compost delivered and spread it around the lawn. That would give it a feeding and increase the water retention of the soil.
Very good. Yes. Okay. Now I see that the one I see online that they say I should feed it with a 15-0-15.
Oh, God.
I'm not too familiar what that means.
That means it's chemical nitrogen, the same stuff that they find in car bombs, and a huge amount of potassium on the back end, which is totally unnecessary.
Okay.
No, you don't need chemical fertilizers. You could feed this with corn gluten meal in the spring, a bagged organic lawn food. But again, I mean, whatever you feed, you're going to use at maximum half the rate on the bag. If it says 10 pounds per 1,000 square feet, you go to 3 or 4 pounds.
Okay.
But if you get good quality compost, that would improve the soil and give the lawn a gentle feeding. The God's honest truth is this grass could probably go 20 years without being fed.
Oh, great. That's good to know.
I don't know what your source is for a 15 nitrogen, but they're out of control. They're just totally crazed.
Great. See, I didn't know. I don't know too much about that. And it's nice to know that you know a lot more than I do.
Yeah. If you're going to go by the numbers on the bag, you want all single digits.
Okay. Okay, great.
That's all right, man.
All right, Mike. I appreciate you taking the time with me.
Oh, my pleasure. Enjoy your new place.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye. Well, it's time for me to take a little break and announce that I will be honored to once again host the Empty Bowl Dinner to benefit homeless families on Wednesday evening, November 15th at the Lutheran Theological Seminary on Germantown Avenue in Philadelphia. But don't go looking for all the details at the events section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back to bury your fig trees alive and take more of your lively phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by the Espoma Company, offering a complete selection of natural organic plant foods and potting soils. More information about Espoma and the Espoma Natural Gardening Community can be found at espoma.com. And by Burpee, celebrating their 141st year of providing treasured heirloom varieties, hardworking hybrids, seed starting, garden supplies, and more. Burpee offers no treated seed or genetically modified organisms. Information at burpee.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we're in the stretch now, cats and kittens. In just a little bit, we'll get to the question of the week. In celebration of Halloween, we will discuss exactly how to bury your fig trees alive. Alive! In the meantime, though, a couple more of your trick-or-treat phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Jenny, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, thanks for taking me.
Well, thank you for giving yourself up to us, Jenny.
Thanks. Yeah, I'm from Fort Washington, Pennsylvania, and I have a question about prickly pear.
Just outside of Philadelphia, sure, the amazing edible cactus, the cactus that produces wonderful edible fruits. What can we do for you and your prickly pear?
I have some local prickly pear that I'd like to grow in a half wine barrel. Last year, I had them in the wine barrel, and they didn't do so well over the winter. Now I've got more of it that I'd like to try this winter, and I want to figure out how I can keep them alive through the winter. So I've been thinking about hay bales around it, and it's going to be in my porch, but last year it was in my porch, and I had some boughs, some evergreen boughs on top, and my pansies did great over the winter. They survived, but the prickly pear didn't.
Well, the pansies can survive winter down to, I believe, zone 4. You can get pretty far north and even up into parts of Canada, and the pansies are going to do just fine. They can't handle summer heat. Prickly pear, to the best of my knowledge, is like an Arizonian plant. The true prickly pear cactus, they are rated maybe even zone 9. I'm thinking zone 8 under the right conditions. Zone 9 and above, that's when they're going to be the happiest and fruiting. They don't like any kind of winter. Now, you say local. That means you bought the plants local. There's no reason.
No, it means that they are from a patch of locally grown, thriving plants that have done great through the winter, which is why, and they're in the ground. And so the difference I'm finding is that in the ground ones, they're surviving. So I'm trying to recreate the in-the-ground environment in my wine barrel.
Well, this is something we need to be talking about more and more. It is very difficult as you get further north to keep plants alive in pots outdoors over the winter. There is a tremendous benefit to plants being able to send their roots down into the soil, where anything left outside over the winter time, whether it's a glass of water you forgot or a plant, that's going to freeze solid on the first night that drops down below 32. Whereby there's a natural insulation of plants in the soil. Do you not have anywhere in the ground?
I do, and I could plant them there. But the idea of having this overflowing wine barrel full of prickly pear is just so enticing that I wanted to try to figure out how to do it.
I'll meet you in the middle. What we're going to do is cheat, because cheaters always win. What I want you to do is get some good plastic pots with, like, better than superb drainage. I would not be unhappy if you used a heavy pair of garden pruners to actually remove the bottom of the pots. Sink the pots into, like, a garden bed or someplace where it's easy for you to dig things to where the lip of the pot is even with your surrounding soil. And then I want you to fill the pots with just high-quality soil-free mix, the cleanest potting mix, seed-starting mix you can find. It should just be peat, perlite, vermiculite, compost or composted forest products. If it's got some natural nutrients in it, like worm castings or something like that, that's fine. But none of this stuff with chemical fertilizer or especially water-holding crystals. So fill the pots up with this after you get them in the ground, and then replant your cactus into these pots. Water them well, but we're using a soil-free mix so that the soil does not get waterlogged over the winter time. Mm-hmm. When you've got a somewhat tender plant like this that might survive in certain areas, you want to make sure it gets excellent drainage. Sometimes people have told me that the reason some rosemaries don't survive in places where they might is the soil doesn't drain well enough and the roots rot.
Gotcha.
So you want to water them in well after you create this. And then if we get really dry spells and we have really cold winters without snow cover, you do want to water them like once a month. But then in the spring, after all risk of frost is done, then you can transfer them back to the wine barrel as soon as that soil is unfrozen and easy to work. And they should thrive. And in the meantime, you know, you can put pansies in the wine barrel over winter. You can cover them with evergreen boughs just for giggles, you know.
Sounds good. Well, thank you so much for your insights on this.
Yeah, good.
I'm curious to figure it out.
I hope you get fruit. I mean, it's amazingly delicious.
Yeah, thank you so much for your help.
All right, good luck.
Thanks. Bye.
1-888-346-9499. Rich, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
How are you today?
I am just ducky. Rich, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, enjoying this wonderful fall hot weather.
And where is Rich Hot and Bothered?
I am hot and bothered in King of Prussia, Pennsylvania.
Okay, very good. And is Rich rich?
In mind and spirit.
Yeah, that's I got a lot of that, too. All right, what can we do for Rich in King of Prussia?
So I gave you a call to figure out why this year, of all years, we have a bumper crop of acorns. It seems like it is raining acorns all the time. When I go to blow some of my leaves, I could go roller skating. We have so many acorns in our backyard, on the grass, everywhere.
And you will go roller skating if you don't watch where you're walking.
It's a problem.
Yeah. So what you need right now is a yard vac or a very high-powered shop vac so that you can suck these things up off the ground. And though, although I hate to say it and people are going to misunderstand it, I want you to trash them.
Okay.
Acorns were once utilized as food by Native Americans. They used a very complex process to make the flour edible. But it's
but why this year do we have so many? It's not. I don't recall, at least in the last 10 years, that we have had this many acorns.
You would understand this better if you were a commercial nut farmer. One of the real serious things about having that kind of an orchard is trees that produce nuts, you know, walnuts, almonds, chestnuts, acorns, never bear heavily every year. Some of them only bear every couple of years, period. I have a hickory tree across the street from me that has tremendous nut drop, but only every 5 or 7 years. So that's kind of the schedule that these trees are on. If you think about the nutrition, the amazing amount of protein and fat that's in a nut, it takes a lot of energy to do that. The trees can't do it every year. So there may have been factors over the past 2 or 3 years that would have given the tree naturally more energy, the milder winters we've had, for instance. But there's also just a chronobiological thing going on where a certain number of years have gone by, and so we were due for a massive drop. Out where I live, it's black, bad word, walnuts. They are all over the place. And they're big. And when I first bought my house, we had a huge nut drop. And I thought kids were throwing stuff at me from the woods. These things coming crashing out of nowhere. But literally, my road is stained from people driving over these huge amounts of black walnuts. Now, the walnuts are a problem because they're going to feed evil squirrels. So in a year, 2 years, there's going to be a buildup of the squirrel population because they love to eat these black walnuts. Your problem is worse, because if you leave those acorns on the ground, they're going to fuel an explosion of deer and the white-footed field mouse, both of which are tick vectors. So if you leave, and just all of the acorns in your area are going to feed this population immensely. So next season, you're going to see a huge increase in ticks. If you want that increase to be on other people's property, you try to clean up as many acorns as you can and then try to keep the deer off your property. Mice don't cover that big a territory, but deer who feed half a mile away could be dropping ticks on your property. So next year, the bottom line here is you should probably invest in some permethrin-treated clothing for when you go walking in the woods or do yard work. There's a company called Insect Shield that sells socks and pants that are pre-treated with permethrin. Permethrin-treated clothing is what's issued to the military when they go into tick-infested areas. When I go out in my garden or go for a little walk in the woods, I put on these permethrin-treated socks. If it's the time of year when I know ticks have been really active, I'll put on the permethrin-treated pants. And as long as I remember to do that, I'll never come home with a tick on me. And
will they?
And you're not putting anything into the groundwater, into the soil, or on your skin. It's protective clothing.
Okay.
So the acorns are not only a foot hazard, you really want to get them off your property as soon as possible so you're not feeding the deer and the mice that carry ticks. It's really important. And this is a good call because everybody who has acorns coming down, it's not just an annoyance. Get them up and get rid of them, or be prepared to have a huge increase in your tick population next season.
Well, time is ticking, and thank you very much.
All right, Rich. Thanks for bringing this up, man.
You got it. Have a good day.
All right. As promised, it's time for the question of the week. Now, we have to point out an error in your playbill, Cats and Kittens. The part of Alexis Landis, who normally reads the question, she's out gallivanting somewhere, will be read by associate producer Brett Rader. Alexis will return at this same time, same bat station, next week. All right, Brett, get us started with this week's question.
Gladly, Mike. Bill in Camden County, New Jersey writes, I'm exploring methods of fig tree protection as we head toward winter. As my fig is completely exposed, I'm considering building the fig house you mentioned briefly in your A to Z answers section. But I need more detail. What materials should be used? Should it be completely surrounded? All the way to the ground? What else should I know? I wish I could attempt your bury it technique, but it just doesn't seem practical in my yard, and my wife thinks I'm crazy for even entertaining the idea. Hey, Mike, what's going on here? We talk about fig protection all the time. Are you just rewriting an old question of the week?
Nope. I thought Bill was wrong when he said the only thing he could find at our A to Z Garden Answers article on figs was a quick mention of one or two protection methods, but he's right. And it was buried at the end of a long article about basic fig tree care. So let's do it up right and get an important resource up at that A to Z section.
Okay, first, the basics. Fig trees are Mediterranean plants that generally need no winter protection if you're in the warmer areas of the USDA growing zone 7 or higher.
Higher numbers mean warmer winters.
But if you're in the mid-Atlantic, Midwest, frozen north, or anywhere that's rated USDA zone 6 or lower, you should probably protect your fig from the worst of winter.
Now, if you're in what we call an indecisive area, the warmer portions of Zone 6 that act more like Zone 7, for instance, and the fig is in a high spot on your property or in a, quote, protected area like next to a garden wall, or even better, in a corner with walls on two sides, it'll need less protection than a fig that's planted down low in a frost pocket or one that's standing out in the open with no walls or windbreaks nearby.
The reason is that unprotected figs in cold climates suffer a lot of winter kill. That's branches dying off from freezing and dehydration. We've never heard of a case where the roots died, but if the fig has to regrow all of its top growth, it might not have time to set fruit before the season is over, especially in a cold climb where winter weather arrives early.
Right. In warm winter areas, like USDA growing zone 8, figs don't need protection. They might even have enough growing time to produce two crops a season. Now, first let's talk about burying them alive, a technique that fellow Rodale Press veteran Pat Capora and his dad Vincenzo showed me back in the fall of 1991. Here's how they did it. In late November, after all the leaves have fallen and the tree has gone dormant, prune off just enough of the branches to make things manageable. Wrap the tree in the same kind of breathable row cover fabric blankets used to protect lettuce and spinach over the winter, and dig a 2-foot deep trench right next to the tree. Tighten the row cover up with string, and then rock the tree's roots slowly out of the ground until you can lay it sideways in the trench. Cover it with scrap wood or carpeting, and then top that off with all the soil you dug to make the trench.
And when is the fig supposed to be resurrected?
Easter Sunday, of course. Or even earlier. Like Rosemary, you just want to protect the tree from the absolute worst of winter in your region. A couple light frosts or cold nights are fine on either end of this process. Anyway, when you're ready, lift it up and out, remove the wrappings, replant it, shovel compost around the base, water deeply right away, and then continue watering once a week if we don't get rain.
Now, I can see how this would really protect the existing growth, but is it really easier than, say, circling the fig with welded wire animal fencing and filling the cage with shredded leaves?
You know, that's a good choice if you're going to take the trouble to double line the bottom of that cage with hardware cloth. Otherwise, mice and voles are going to squeeze in and nibble away at that bark.
Which would be bad. But what about, quote, wrapping the fig?
Ah, this is the heart of cowboy gardening. The least intensive method would be to wait until dormancy, do a little light pruning, and then string heavy-duty row covers around the fig. Even better, do two or three layers. But gardeners who are handy and prefer real projects are going to frame out the area to make a little house for the tree and then secure plywood walls and a roof to the frame. Make sure that roof is slanted or it'll collapse under heavy snow.
Just don't use any kind of plastic if the fig is going to remain standing. The plant would get cooked on a sunny day and then freeze up when the sun goes down that night.
And don't prune too early in the fall. If that fig isn't dormant, you'll stimulate new growth at the worst time of year. Well, that sure was some interesting information about supporting your local figs, now wasn't it? Luckily for you, the question of the week appears in print at the Gardens Alive website. To read it over in detail, just click the link for the question of the week at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Gardens Alive supports the You Bet Your Garden question of the week. Yikes, my producer is threatening to unwrap my brown turkey if I don't get out of this studio. We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499. Or send us your email, your tired, your poor, your wretched refuse teeming towards our garden shore at garden@whyy.org. Oh, and for Pete's sake, please include your location. What, you think we're asking you for your money? And visit our website, youbetyourgarden.org, where we won't ask you for location or money, but where you will find the answers to all your garden questions, audio of this show, past shows, and our podcast. Okay, if it's pledge drive week, we will ask you for your money, but we don't care where you are. We continue to send get well wishes to Elizabeth Perez Luna, executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Ken Queter continues to play our theme song. Our parole officer is Sweet Staven Naomi Sturrobin. Our engineer this week is Al Banks. Our social media director is Amanda McGrath. Check out her fine work at the You Bet Your Garden Facebook page. Larissa Sapko and Rich Banowitz keep our website under wraps. AWOL Alexis Landis produces You Bet Your Garden for WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. Apparently whenever she feels like it. Our editor is Figgy Al Banks. Our intern is Robert Fogarty. Our head chairman, associate producer of Production Association is Brett Rader. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. I'm wearing a Bride of Frankenstein eating figs t-shirt. And I was working at the lab late one night when... Oh, what? We used that up last month? Oh, darn. I guess I'll just have to see you again next week. Whatever happened to the Transylvania twist? What can you expect to hear next week? I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden, I have no idea what we're going to do. Only that it will be fun and that I will get into trouble. Plus your fabulous phone calls.